Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Are you feeling a bit animated? Well, come on over to the Wicked Anime Podcast on the Nerdy Show Network, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to animation, Japanese culture, and all things anime. With a true industry perspective, we're always diving deeper than school uniforms and tentacle monsters. Join us on the Wicked Anime Podcast, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. It's Wicked A!
The following episode of Flame On is presented by the Nerdy Show Network.
Geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse.
All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by a comic shop.
Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination.
And with the generous support of listeners like you.
To learn how you can support this and other fine geeky programming, visit nerdyshow.com. What's going on, everybody? Pat DeBeer here, and we are back again with another pop culture roundup for your ears. I am joined by Eric.
Hello.
Brian.
Howdy.
And BJ.
What's up?
And we are here to discuss the things that are tickling our fancy here in the month of July 2021. And there's lots of great stuff. There's lots of great pop culture. I know I had to narrow mine down and think of a couple different things that really I enjoyed this month. Normally, I've been struggling because I tend to watch a lot of repeat television, but there were a couple of good things. So obviously, at least one thing will get left behind. But you know, we're gonna take it as it comes. So why don't we go ahead and jump right into the topics. Brian, why don't you kick us off? What is your topic for this month?
So I have a great privilege, whatever you say, to know a couple comic book creators. And two of the creators that I got to know a little bit are out of San Francisco. L.A. Close, but not quite, right? Nicole Go and David Baker. And they've been doing stuff. We've talked about them on the show. They did Fuck Off Squad, Shitty Watchmen, Action Hospital. And they didn't collaborate on all of those, but most of those, I think. So they collaborate a lot. Dave's more of the writer. Nicole's more of the artist. And so they had a new book come out this month. From Dark Horse, and it's called Everyone is Tulip, which is kind of a bizarre title and interesting, unusual, I should say. And I found out it was coming out. I went down to my local comic shop here in Shoreline, and they had it. I was like, yes, this is great. I'm so excited. I had no idea what to expect. I've been not reading as many comics. We haven't obviously talked about as many comics on the show, though we will, I believe, today make up for that. But Everyone is Tulip is beautiful. First of all, Nicole's art. I wish we were doing it on like the web stream, you know, video. You got to go Google Everyone is Tulip. Nicole's art is style is just so beautiful. I think Ellie Hall is the colorist. I got to confirm that. And the tones. Yeah, Ellie Hall. Oh, and Nicole. did colors. The tones of this book, it's so iconically like pink and blue and just purples and just, it's a beautiful book. But the story, most of you probably more interested in the story, right? It's about this actress, up and coming actress, who kind of one day after working dead end service, food service jobs, basically says, fuck it, I'm moving to LA. And to put their name out there to try to get acting gigs and, you know, build a career. So she moves out there and they kind of go into flashbacks of that whole story. And this gig she lands after some, you know, not so great auditions is sort of a weird performance art, like photo shoot, really, because she's not doing much other than standing there, but she is talking. And it's her in various outfits. And she's just saying, everyone is Tulip. And you get these beautiful, well, you know, I'm going to show our group here, 9 panel pages of Nicole basically just sketching this character in different outfits and saying everyone is Tulip. Now they do this a few times throughout the book. So, you know, it's there. It's repetitive for a reason. Like that's the art piece that's being released. And it causes like a viral sensation. Like the internet just takes off. Like they love this. It's so mysterious and bizarre. And we've all seen these kind of bizarre, whether it's a meme or a TikTok or before that a YouTube or whatever video going viral. We all know what that looks like. We've all seen that process. And so this book kind of explores a little bit about like the person and people who might be behind one of those intentional, like, you know, viral video things. And then from there, it kind of goes off the rails in a weird way. I don't want to spoil like too much because it is interesting. But the cast of characters, you know, you get this auteur director who is trying to be like so pure, kind of Andy Warhol-esque about like his creation of Tulip. And, you know, that gets involved and muddy. But like, you know, he takes her to a party and she wants to just be herself and like talk to people. And he's like, no, no, no. All you can say is everyone is Tulip. That's all you can say. That we got to preserve the brand. We got to preserve the character. Yeah, like it's very interesting. It's very again, echoes of like auteurs of like an Andy Warhol. I say Andy Warhol. I believe he did something like this, but you know, don't quote me on that. I also love, because Nicole and Dave are younger. You're younger creators. They organically get social media in the way they write their comics. And so you have these little thought bubbles and little cutaways of social media, like notifications. So there's one panel where you just see her phone sitting on her bedside and you get like a 2-page spread of this bedroom, which is beautiful. And you flip it and the next page and you've got like these chiclets, they call them, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. And then you get the little numbers. And so the only difference between that and the previous 2-page spread is these notification pop-ups. And that's a really great way of capturing sort of the escalation of the viral video taking off. She also, Dave and her also love to use, I'll show our group again, like the 9-panel grid to do text conversations. And so you'll have it in the panel in like a sort of vaguely familiar GUI, showing the conversations. And again, other writers, this isn't brand new, like other writers have definitely done this before, other artists, but I feel like this is very organic and believable. Some writers and creators, unfortunately, they probably know what their kids tell them. I mean, some of them obviously are on Twitter or whatever, they get it, but like, it just feels very believable and organic. So I was reading about in the back matter, cause it's a trade, it's a $20 trade. But very, I mean, this book is beautiful for $20, and it's pretty thick. It's really a great deal. Yeah, I was reading about the creation of this, and I guess they were over in Europe. They did Thought Bubble, which is if you're familiar with Comic Cons, it's like I think it's London, might not be London, but it's in England. I'll just go with England. It's a big English Comic Con. And they were like trying to just come up with some ideas and sort of brainstorm. And one of their themes is art is time travel. And the reason they say that is this is like a message in a bottle. Art, any art, our podcast is an example of this. It is a moment in time captured in some medium that then can talk to the future. And so, you know, this book is very much of that era when they were touring around and doing all this, and they wanted to kind of delve into what it's like for art and artists and young up and coming creators, actors, whatever art you're doing, the struggle of trying to make it, the opportunities that you're presented, and sort of the unfortunate or fortunate reality that you're not going to necessarily know what you're famous for. Like, you don't get to choose that. If you are so fortunate to blow up for whatever, you don't always get to manufacture that. Sometimes it's for things you did not intend. You may not want. So it deals with a lot of that. And it's a really fun little book. There's some other characters in it that are, there's like a mother son character, characters that have like a nice little story. You can definitely see some cool little LA sort of scenes and moments, and that they're really entrenched in that world, and it's cool to sort of see and recognize some of that preserved here. So yeah, I don't know. Everyone is Tulip is certainly a different comic. It's not your superhero. It's not your average, you know, whatever that you would probably find in the comic shop. But if you go look for it, it's probably there. Just came out like last week as we're recording this, so very recent. You should check it out and just try it or flip through it at least and see if you like the sort of style and the pictures and the interesting sort of different story. And yeah, let us know if you like it. We're going to try to get Dave and Nicole on the Monday show once the Monday show comes back in a more reliable schedule. They both said they'd be happy to come on, and I want to talk more about this with them. So Everyone is Tulip by Dark Horse. Go check it out.
I posted the main website for the comic up on the Facebook.
You're amazing.
You're talking about the art, and I was like, I have the internet at my disposal. I can totally put some of the art.
I found
the website, and I was like, oh, there we go. So the website for Everyone is Tulip is up on the Facebook page for those of you that follow us on Facebook.
Is it just everyoneistulip.com or something?
Everyoneistulip.com.
Perfect.
So when you're listening to this, if you're on the Patreon feed and you're getting this early, it should be a recent post on our page. If you were listening to this when it comes out to the general population, you may have to scroll back a little bit, but go to everyoneistulip.com. What is Nicole's last name, the spelling of it? Because I know that it's spelled a little bit different than kind of pronounced.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Yeah, G-O-U-X.
The French way.
Yes.
Or French-esque.
And Dave Baker, the writer, has, and they co-created this, by the way. He has a podcast that I have started to get through. It's great. It's very deep dives. Actually, it's called Deep Cuts. So it's Deep Cuts, the podcast. They go on just random. You won't even know week to week or episode to episode what topics they're on. Like the last one they did. Wow, they're up to 73. The church that worships guns. And it's just this deep dive on a topic. And it's really great. They do videos, watch along sometimes. So yeah, Deep Cuts, the podcast, if you want to go check out some more of Dave's stuff as well. But Action Hospital is probably what he's most well known for. Oh, and both of them are doing mainstream work now too. Dave did a Voyager, I believe, comic for IDW. And Nicole's done, it's like Shadow of the Bat as an artist. Anyway, so they're both up-and-coming creators who are now starting to get, like, you know, Marvel DC work. And they have a bright future, as they like to say. But no, they're great. They're so sweet, too. Every time I see them in a show, Pat, you'd remember this. One of the pins that they sell enamel pins. Mm-hmm. It's they have that whole, what is it?
This is a Bill,
Stan Lee
Bill
is
Finger
a liar.
One?
Which one?
Was that where you got the Bill Finger?
Yep.
Yep.
Basically, if you know the story of Batman at all, Bill Finger is the artist who co-created Batman and the Joker and created the Joker. Like, he gets no credit a lot of times, or didn't for a while. What's his name? Kane. We get all the credit, you know, and it's all people knew. So there's a pin that they sell that's like, what is it? Not Gil Kane, but it's whatever anyway, that guy is an asshole or a liar. Like, they just put these pins out that are very like deep dive comic history, but like boiled down to an enamel pin with a symbol. So they're great. They have a great, great fun convention. Anytime you can go see them, they always vend together. So, yep.
Nice. That's Everyone is Tulip. Go check it out. Go to the website if you can't find it. Obviously, we want to support the artists as much as possible. We also, in a new normal, quote-unquote, world, we want to make sure that we're also supporting our local comic shops because small businesses matter. So go check out your local comic shop, see if they have it in stock there, see if they can order it for you. That way you can still support both the local merchant and the artist as well. So go check that out and go to the Facebook page and check out the website so you can get a feel for the art first. And maybe we can even take some pictures and put them up on our Instagram as well, since that is a very image-forward platform. All right, let's throw it over to Eric, the one who has not twitched yet.
So my topic is a trilogy, of which two out of the three are currently out on Netflix. It's the Fear Street trilogy, part one, 1994, and part two, 1978, are already on Netflix. They are based off of the classic Fear Street series written by R.L. Stine. They're not direct adaptations. They're kind of an original story based on the property. Just about this town, Shadyside, Ohio, who just has a run of serial killers as long as the town's been around, basically. And it's always just blamed on them going crazy, but it's really because of a witch and just possessing people and turning them into serial killers. And it's a fun slasher teen movie. The first one, 1994. The second one is more of a classic throwback to a serial killer at a camp, a la Friday the 13th, 1 and 2. I really didn't recognize any of the production people or most of the actors.
I know the second one has the
Sadie Sink, who's the redhead from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. As well as Jillian Jacobs. She's kind of the narrator of the second movie.
I'm sorry, it's Gillian?
Gillian.
The hard G.
I apologize.
She is a Drag Race super fan, and don't you forget
it, please. I understand
this.
But the movies are good. I enjoyed them.
I held off on them because I thought they were just slasher flicks, like they had no supernatural element. Because like it's, I mean, I like the way they kind of advertise them because they're really ambiguous. Yeah. At first, and then I saw like a random, like I think it was like a final trailer to announce that it had come out, and I was like, there's this weird little supernatural scene, and I was like, wait, what? I was like, huh? And I used to read those books like religiously when I was in junior high.
Yeah, I had so many of them back, and it's weird because those books really started coming out before Goosebumps came out, and Goosebumps blew up as he likes to scare him younger and younger. I also think it's kind of interesting the way this trilogy is going kind of backwards in time, as opposed to showing the origin of it first and then going forward in time. Because the third movie is just basically going to be the origins of the witch herself, which is fun. But they're a good watch if you can't wait until October for all the other scary movies to come out. I wouldn't say there's a lot of jump scares. It's just kind of a classic slasher, but it's good. And there's some unexpected deaths. So it's fun.
It's funny because that kind of the backwards storytelling, the kind of the flashback sort of style of storytelling. I feel like that used to be kind of the mainstream when it came to horror. But then like, then you had American Horror Story happen, where sometimes you have flashbacks, and then sometimes you have flash forwards, and then sometimes you have, like, alternate storylines going along with another one that are technically in a different time frame. So it's interesting how everything old is new again.
Mm-hmm. And they're great time capsules as well, especially the soundtracks.
Everybody's been telling me the soundtrack's amazing.
Yeah. But check it out on Netflix. Fear Street Part 1 and Part 2 and Part 3 comes out next Friday.
So when this episode drops, Part 3 will be available. Or yes, are we doing, is it a week from?
So you can binge the whole trilogy.
Nice. Very nice. I thought there was going to be more time in between. I feel like there was... Was it that quick between Parts 1 and Part 2?
Yeah, it was July 2nd, July 9th, and then July 16th.
Oh, they said you get no time before the next part comes out. You either watch this now or the next part's going to be waiting for you when you're done. Which isn't bad.
I'm okay with that because I haven't watched the first one yet. So now if I put it off long enough, I can watch all three of them almost at the same time.
How long are these movies, shows, episodic, the first two parts of the trilogy, Eric?
They're not quite 2 hours each.
Oh, okay.
So they're movies. These are,
like, full-length feature films?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So that is Fear Street Parts 1 and 2 available as of our recording. Part 3 will be available when this gets released to general population. Again, I have to preface that with, if you're listening to this on Patreon as part of our first listen, then only Parts 1 and Part 2 are available. But if you are listening every day, apparently I feel more and more like gayest episode ever, Eric. This is just gotta stop this. If you're listening on the Patreon feed, then this is an episode about this.
Exactly.
But it's one of the perks of being one of our Patreon subscribers at a specific level. I believe Sissyster 6 level and the House of X level get exclusive first listen to the episodes. And because we're recording on our proper recording day, it should be out the earliest that it would be on Sunday. So you'll get a full week ahead of the rest of the world. All the millions and millions of people who are listening to these episodes every 2 weeks. So feel free to go over to Patreon and join. A little shameless plug for Patreon before we get to the middle of the episode. But, you know, it happens. So I am going to actually do my topic because I think at least 3/4 of us have all partaken in BJ's topic, which I think will be a little meatier and a little more conversation heavy. So I will go ahead.
Meteor.
So meaty.
Meteor.
Aw.
Unless Mars becomes a meteor, and then that could be a problem. So my topic is a Netflix television show called Special. It's an American comedy streaming television series. It premiered on Netflix April 12th, 2019. The series itself is based on the memoir I'm Special and Other Lies We Tell Ourselves that was released in 2015 by Ryan O'Connell. He is also the star, the writer, and executive producer for the series. In 2019, in December, the series was renewed for a second season. The Wikipedia page says second and final season. I feel like it was put that way because it is over now, and it's the second season was said to be the final season. But if I'm not mistaken, I think Ryan was on Ask Me Another and it talked about the fact that they didn't know that it was a going to be the final season when they started production, which I hope, because one of my few drawbacks on this is kind of how quickly the story wraps up in the end. But the second season premiered on May 20th of 2021 and it is the final season. So the story has wrapped up according to the Netflix platform. And the focus of the memoir and the show is Ryan. In the show, he is Ryan Hayes. He becomes an unpaid intern at a lifestyle blogging platform website called Eggwoke. And he has cerebral palsy. And in the first few moments of the television show of season one, he's hit by a car and kind of conflates, because of public perception, that the accident is what causes his limp and for him to have certain muscular issues as far as being able to how, you know, coordination and actual muscular movement issues. And he, not wanting to kind of be pigeonholed as being disabled and having kind of that faux sympathy bestowed upon him, runs with it, for lack of a better term, and just kind of uses that car crash, that car accident, as the way for people to be able to kind of dote over him and shower him with sympathy at times, as opposed to his actual disability. The show itself, it takes a little bit to get going in the first season, but it finds its stride. There is a lot of humor. I wish I could find, I've been off Facebook for a while for the most part, but I think when I first watched the show, the head of Eggwoke, Olivia, is having this meeting and just kind of rifles off like an egg, banana, cigarettes, like as her shopping list. And it's like, there are just these little bits and pieces that are scattered through it that are just unbelievably fantastic. Ryan's best friend in the show is Kim. Poonam Patel is the actor who plays Kim, and she is a plus-sized, very empowered female who kind of is almost a life advisor and life coach for Ryan when he comes to Eggwoke. And they build this fantastic friendship, and she pushes him out of his comfort zone. And the first season ends after he's moved out. He's had a fight with his mom, and because of their codependent relationship, which a lot of gay sons kind of end up having, that very close-knit relationship with their mother, sometimes to a more codependent extent than others. But the second season really kind of focuses on him in his own world and the strain that kind of finding your own way, especially when you've been so close and so dependent on somebody within your life, whether it's your mother or somebody else, and also kind of his love life, and takes a very direct look at ableism. It takes a very direct look at being fetishized. You know, and these are things that can also be extrapolated, not just from an able, disabled kind of talking point, but can be extrapolated into conversations about race and about income inequality. And you can take a lot of these topics and really kind of put them onto a lot of other very important and very highly visible social situations. But it does show how there are people out there who, you know, very much will fetishize a specific section of the population out there. And, you know, he's Ryan kind of gets internet famous for his article about his cerebral palsy and ends up meeting this guy at a bar who's like, oh, I'm such a big fan of yours. And the guy's attractive, you know, in the standard white gay type of way. It's very much a, you know, a 10 and a 5 type of thing. Or do you, Eric, were you a Will and Grace fan? Do you remember when he was dating, was it Taye Diggs? And they were talking about like how one person is always hotter than like the other, and everybody kind of notices it and pities the one who's less hot. Do you remember that?
I mean, I don't remember that specific example, but I know it's been used in a lot of.
I remember shows. That episode.
Yeah, but there's always the conversation where everybody looks and it's like, oh, you know, they kind of take pity on the less attractive one. So in this instance, Ryan is the less attractive of the two, and the other guy is he has lots of IMDb credits. He's been in Hallmark movies. You know, it's kind of funny the things that he's quote unquote famous for and why he is better than Ryan. But when they finally get down to, you know, having sex, it's a matter of him. This guy is kind of just like caressing Ryan's scars and saying all these things that are just utterly creepy and disturbing, and how when you're in that position, even though you can turn around and stop and just say no, but the fact that it's not easy to just stop and say no and to take back that consent because you don't feel like you can, because you've already given that consent and you don't feel like you can take it back. And then when he's done, he gets into a bath and just tries to scrub all of it off of him. And it's a very interesting look at social issues that we see in certain lenses in media or in, you know, the news versus seeing it from this perspective.
Which that's very interesting, as opposed to in season one, where he has his first sexual experience with that escort, and who's played by Brian Jordan Alvarez, who's most famous from, what is it, The Gay and Fabulous Life of Caleb Gallo? Is that the Gay and Wondrous Life of Caleb Gallo?
And he's Jack's husband in the revival of Will and Grace.
Yep.
And he plays this escort who he's had experience with other people with cerebral palsy, because a lot of times they're kind of ashamed or feel like they can't get anyone, so they end up paying for sex. And so he understands Ryan's limitations, physical limitations, and is just very slow and caring. And so it's interesting that this other person treats it so differently.
Yeah. And I mean, it's so that is one of the encounters. There is a very interesting polyamorous relationship and how that is treaded, and how I know, Eric, you've seen season one, you haven't seen season two, so I'm mm-hmm. going to try to tread lightly on how I describe things so as not to, because there are a lot of things that are very well done for this season, and I wish had more time to breathe, but the way that they present the situation and how it all kind of works out and where things happen within a polyamorous relationship and having rules. And it's probably one of the few, if only, poly relationships that I've seen handled in a very careful and nuanced way, where they talk about rules and they talk about how things were kind of set up between the two of them. It's a very interesting take on it. And this person doesn't know about cerebral palsy, doesn't know what it means, and kind of pushes Ryan to do things that are outside of his limitations. It also, there's also a beat in the story in the season about how his mom wouldn't let him attempt to do things because she overly protected him and would not even try to find what his limitations were. She, just as an overprotective mother, a very caring and very loving mother, but a very overprotective mother, would stop him before it even got to that point. So instead of saying, okay, let's see if we can do this and then figure out where that limit is, would set that limit well before knowing if he could even attempt to do it. So it's a lot of the first, I want to say maybe five episodes are very well thought out. They're very well paced, in my opinion. I think that was around the time that they found out that the show was ending. Again, I don't remember 100%, but I can swear that Ophira and Jonathan Coulton interviewed Ryan for Ask Me Another, and he was talking about it on their show where they found out that it was going to be the last season. And the last three episodes really kind of seemed to speed up the resolution to the storylines. And that is honestly my only real fault. I mean, obviously there are things that are maybe not all tens across the board, but overall it's a very good season. And then it kind of speeds to the finish and it puts everybody into a good place, which it's nice that they were able to kind of rework it to make it a final piece of the story versus just kind of ending and not having closure for the viewers. So overall, I do recommend, especially if you've seen season one, to watch season two. If you haven't seen the show and you are interested in seeing more queer representation in, we'll call this a television show because it's a series for Netflix. It was brought about in conjunction with Jim Parsons, who we've never really been huge fans of Big Bang Theory, I believe, in this room, but it's good to see somebody like him who built up fame and notoriety to use that to help bring other queer art to the forefront, especially from a section of the community that doesn't get a lot of attention, from the disabled community, disabled, differently abled. I'm not sure where the current stance is, so I apologize if I'm not using terminology that is proper. I'm just using most of it from what I've heard from the television show. So again, please forgive me if I have misspoken on any of that, and feel free to hit me up and let me know. But overall, go check it out. It's on Netflix. You can watch it now. The entire second season is there. Both seasons are up. And full disclosure, Ryan is like my bestie because we met in Provincetown and I took a picture with him. So just saying, we're like best friends. So that was my star-studded year in P-Town for Bear Week, which apparently is starting up today, which makes me sad because I don't even know if there really is like an official Bear Week, but I know that people are there and it's making me sad that I'm not. But we met Ryan O'Connell in Provincetown 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago. It was the last time I went. For a second, I thought, Eric, you were there with us, but I think that was the year you did not go with us. Mm-hmm. And Mikey, Scotty, Matthew, Chrissy, and I were there. But we were walking down Commercial Street, and Mikey actually stopped him. And we got to talk to him for a minute. It was nice. Super sweet guy and super fun interview. If you are not an NPR's Ask Me Another listener, go check out the episode where he is the interview, where he is their special guest, because he talks a lot about the show, his experience, and about his book. And it was definitely a fun listen. So if you haven't done it yet, go check out Special on Netflix. Boom, boom.
So as far as Bear Week goes, it doesn't look like the actual Provincetown website says that it's happening. But as far as like planned events and like performances and stuff, it looks like they're going to be very light on those this year. So they're expecting people to show up. But like as far as like, you know, drag performances from famous drag queens and stuff like that, a lot of that stuff's not happening.
Yeah, ptownbears.org, which is the Provincetown Bears website, that is the group that is in charge of Bear Week. Their website is still legit just a page where it announces the suspension of Bear Week Provincetown 2020. It says dates for Bear Week Provincetown 2021 are July 10th, 2021 through July 18th, 2021. But it does not say anything else. So I don't think that the P-Town Bears really planned anything. There are no run passes. But Provincetown is a delightful place to visit regardless of what is going on. So I am still jealous. It is still my happy place. It's a beautiful, beautiful little town to go to, and seeing people on Twitter talking about walking down Commercial Street. And I'm like, am I going to have to go off of Twitter for the next week so I don't get jealous? But at the same time, one, starting a new job, and two, you know, COVID's still out there.
Yeah.
I know everybody in this room is fully vaxxed, but, you know.
We're still coming out of a panorama.
Mm. That Pandemi Lovato is still around. And
the Padme Lakshma.
Oh.
The Padme Amidala.
Pandora box hasn't been eliminated yet.
No. Speaking of Pandora box and Paramount Plus, can I just say, when I so I have a Samsung smart TV, and when I hover, like when I move the cursor over the apps on my home screen, their little a little pop-up box appears across the top, and it will have like shows that I've watched, like continue watching. And All-Star 6 is on there, and it is the worst, most unflattering picture of Pandora box that is the still. I'm going to have to take a picture, and I will put it up on our social media, because my lord, like, yes, Pandora is an older queen. I'm an older gay. Like, you know, we're all getting to that point. But dear Lord, this makes her look like Methuselah, and it's just so, it's honestly, it's homophobic.
It's interesting that she was the one that ended up on the screen grab anyways, because she's had so little screen time.
I was going to say, it's the most so screen time that she's had is on my TV as that still. Click, clack, click, clack. That's the sound of a slingback. All right. So before we continue on and talk about our last topic and get into our one-ups, we just want to, one, say thank you to all of our listeners out there for continuing to be our listeners. Thanks to our Patreon subscribers who have moved their subscription over from the previous tiers to our new tiers. Thank you for checking out the Rainbow Spotlight series that Brian hosts. Thank you for checking out our Twitch streams. Eric, but thank you all for just, you know, being there and supporting us. Make sure you check out our website, flameonshow.com. You can check out all of our different avenues of media, whether it is where you can watch us, where you can watch us play video games, where you can listen to us, how you can support us through our Threadless shop, going to our different social medias, our Instagram, our Twitter, our Facebook, our TikTok. We don't have a TikTok, but, you know, just thank you for going and checking all of those out. And like I mentioned before, head over to patreon.com/flameonshow, and you can support the show by joining one of our four new Patreon levels. So there are great perks available. We may have just ordered the pins, which should be here in the next, hopefully the next 2 weeks. So our patrons at those specific levels will start to see merch going out sooner rather than later. So I'm super excited about that. When I got to place the order, it was so much like just a burst of excitement when I pressed the little pay now button. Not because I wanted to spend money, but because I can't wait to see what these pins look like. We've all seen the proof, and it looks fantastic, and we can't wait for you all to see it out there. We may have some special guest hosts coming up in the next few months. We're going to have some Patreon-picked micros coming out here soon. We are getting caught up on all of the media that we are behind on, so I definitely thank you all for being patient with us, and the last couple months have just been a little crazy with us all, you know, between jobs and the world starting to reopen, which has changed some of our scheduling. So I appreciate that. BJ's first episode of Why So Spicy is going up on Patreon very soon as well. So lots of great stuff coming your way. I do want to give a big thank you and shout out to Hoodoo Voodoo, who has switched over and has joined one of our new Patreon levels. You've been a supporter of ours for a little while now. I actually don't know exactly who Hoodoo Voodoo is, but you've been fantastic and been a great support of ours for quite a bit of time here on Patreon. So thank you, Hoodoo Voodoo. And with that being said, here is BJ's horoscope directly for you.
Today's colors are green, red, and blue, the color of a rotting body, but not yours, because you're alive, that you know of. You're breathing, you're processing food, you're doing all the things a living body should be doing, and you're not at all a simulation. Your lucky numbers are 12, 69, 13, and 45.
BJ, those are a lot of fun. I know Joel was very excited about his. He had forgotten there was a horoscope that he was getting for the last episode, and you've recorded a bunch of them, so that way you don't have to do them right on the top of your head. So we appreciate that, but they've been fun, and with you doing them pre-recorded, BJ, you get to be extra creepy in them, which is essential for a horoscope, I think.
I've been coming up with various ideas, and I've actually been looking up what they do for horror movie sound effects, and some of them are like literally you can just go to like the dollar store and pick up some stuff. So I'm gonna be up in my game.
All right. We also want to give a big thank you and shout out to Jose. Jose has been a long time listener and pledger on Patreon, or patron, I guess I should say. Jose is our second member. So Jose's been a patron for 20 months. It's almost 2 years of supporting us on Patreon. Jose, you are amazing. Thank you. He is our second member of the House of X. So you may be hearing Jose on our podcast as a special guest host in the not too distant future, if Jose would like to. And Jose, you'll be seeing that pin in the mail coming very soon. Jose and Joel are our two Howls members at the moment. So you can join them in getting not only first listens to our episodes, but also some swag, including pins and an upcoming Flame On postcard. Joining us as a special guest host, there's lots of great perks. But Jose, here is your horoscope, personalized, but not really, just for you.
Remember today while you're watching TV that when you respond, they can't hear you. Because think about how terrifying that would be if everything on the screen could hear you and respond. Every person, every place, everything, every vampire, every werewolf, every conceptual horror that you could ever think of. Watching you, responding to you, whenever you're looking at your glowing tube box.
Ooh, that one was creepy, BJ. That one was creepy. But we want to thank you all. We appreciate your support. We appreciate everybody just tuning in, telling a friend about the show, writing us a review, just doing what you're doing, and share the wealth, spread the word, and let your friends know about our show. And join our Patreon at any of the four levels at patreon.com/flameonshow.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's get back into our last topic. Again, I saved this one for last because There were like 17 parts to the story. And I think most of us, or I know most of us have read it. I don't know. Eric is usually the one that kind of ends up sitting out the comics talk. So
what are comics? I don't understand.
So, yeah, so Eric will be taking a nap during this. Eric's going to continue setting up his Twitch channel in the while we talk about comics. y'all are going to be gooped when Eric comes out of nowhere and he's got like the most professionally styled channel because he has spent like 3.5 years preparing
right.
it. And then he's going to play a video game. It'll be like Donkey Kong. It'll be like some old school Donkey Kong. And then he'll just sign off and be like, and I'm done with my Twitch career. Thank you. So while Eric is working on that, BJ, why don't you tell us what our last topic of this month is?
Oh, boy. So for those of you that haven't been paying much attention to comics lately, a little event happened over in the island of Krakoa called the Hellfire Gala. It was about 12 comics. It encompassed pretty much all of the current X-Men titles. And boy howdy did the mutants flex on everybody. But before we kind of get to the event, before the event, we had a Swords of X, which kind of gave a little bit more backstory into Apocalypse's pre-life. The sister island to Krakoa, was that
Araco. And it's Ten of Swords, BJ. It's Ten of Swords.
Ten of Swords? Oh, okay.
Ten of Swords, yep. Just like the tarot card. Come on, tying it back into House of X, Powers of Ten.
Powers of Ten. So before the Hellfire Gala, you have all sorts of issues going on with the... there's a problem with the supply chain for the Krakoan flowers for the medication. There's an issue with now that Krakoa has its sister island attached that all of a sudden, you know, the island's bigger and there's a couple hundred more mutants hanging out there that hasn't been announced to the general world. Everybody's starting to get a little antsy to see what the mutants are doing. So part of a solution to all this is the Herald Hellfire Gala, which Emma Frost has put together as a part of the Hellfire Trading Company's almost like the Met Gala, but it's more of an international party with all superheroes. I gotta say, Dr. Doom shows up. You've got the Avengers showing up. Tony shows up with like one of his suits filled with psi dampeners. Refusing to wear his flower invitation lapel in standard Tony Stark fashion. The mutants all have, what's really interesting to me is that the way they put this event on shows kind of how they've evolved past the like human standards of putting on events. There's a really cool section where all of the telepaths on the island put together a symphony, but they connect everybody's mind. So you get to play an instrument and they also give you like the know-how to play the instrument. So everybody kind of has this, it's a really cute moment that you can see all the people who are kind of taken in by this sort of interesting take on like entertainment. And then you have a couple, I think there's an ambassador from Britain that's just kind of like, this is just trickery by the mutants. Whereas you have other people that are like, that was actually very beautiful. You've got all the surface level events. They also use all the telepaths around the island to hold a vote for the new X-Men team, which Rogue is team leader. I believe she's team leader. Is she?
No, Jean and Scott, I think, are still technically okay. Team leaders.
Yeah, but it's Jean, Scott, Rogue, Polaris, Sunspot.
Sunfire.
Yes. I don't know.
No, Sunspot was pissed that he was not elected.
He was. because he popped up a lot in X-Corp. But yeah, so they select a new X-Men team, which is, I'm very interested to see how things kick off when that book hits.
We're one issue in. It did come out this past Wednesday. So
okay. So as of this recording drop, the first issue's up.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
In addition to planet-sized X-Men, which I'm sure, like, planet-sized X-Men by the same creative team of Jerry Duggan and what's his name? Pepe. I cannot remember the artist.
Pepe Larraz?
Yes, Pepe. That planet-sized X-Men book is the cornerstone of this whole event, right?
Oh my god!
I don't. Okay, so it's called Planet Size X-Men. BJ, do you understand the why of that? I mean, there's the reason in the story, but do you know the tie back to the giant size X-Men?
I don't know the tie back. Okay, I know that there is a tie back, but I wasn't aware of.
No, it's okay. Giant Size X-Men is the X-Men book that introduced like the second generation after the original five of Scott Jean.
The 1975 number one.
Yes. And it also featured Krakoa very prominently in a totally different light. And so this relaunch, this new X title starts with number one formally, but giant planet sized X-Men as sort of a reference to that. And also the reference to what happens in that issue. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that I feel like there's a lot there. You talk about flexing, like the mutants flexing.
Yeah. That, so. I audibly gagged when I was reading, because there's an event that happens. I don't know how spoilery we're going to go with this.
It's been out for a month or two.
Okay, well, yeah. Five, technically six, five mutants terraform Mars. And I'm like, what? But what's funny to me is it's not even just the terraforming of Mars that... Like the creation of Krakoa and the creation of the five, the creation of the flowers, the medication for the human race, like all of that was kind of a direct flex on humanity. But this, like, not only shows, because like Krakoa has only been there for what, like a year? Not even like within the comics.
It's a little over. Yeah, I don't know in comic time because Marvel time is crazy, but it's like been a little. It's been over a year.
It's been a little over a year, but they have effectively just a year of mutants working together and figuring out new and interesting ways to use their powers. Not to mention the Sister Island mutants. Like they used two of them, and it's just this idea that they. It's they terraform the planet, but it's not just terraforming the planet. It's the creation of a spaceport and having that planet being formally recognized by other galactic empires. Like that right there is like, that's just a backhanded compliment to Earth right there. Because when you think about it, Earth's not formally like the capital of the solar system.
So, like, to put this in perspective for non-X-Men comic fans. Oh, by the way, House of X came out 2 years ago. So we've been in Krakoa world for 2 years now, or thereabouts. Imagine if, like, let's just say China. I mean, I'm picking a nation, but, you know, pick whatever nation that's not the U.S., let's say. U.S. is like Earth, right? And they just go off and say, all right, we're terraforming Mars. And, oh, by the way, we've made this spaceport. And, oh, by the way, this is now the capital of the solar system. And everybody agrees to that. And, you know, thanks. And they don't ask. They just do it. That's kind of the geopolitical, more than geo, what is it, solar political. Like, that's what, it's crazy. Like, if you think about it from that larger perspective. Now, in the story, it's mostly the mechanics of it with a little bit of this and that. But what I love about Hellfire Gala is they do it in a very non-linear sort of fashion. Uh-huh. So you don't just go point A to point, you know, the end, and there's the terraforming as the big highlight of the night. They actually start in that first issue. I believe it was Marauders.
Yeah, it's Marauders 21.
And they show the beginning, and then they show the end as people are leaving, and they leave out major chunks that then the other books fill in, and Planet Size X-Men being the big event that you only get like a sense of a reaction. And then the reaction's delightfully vague, although Jerry Duggan wrote the Marauders issue as well as Planet Size X-Men. So, I mean, it all fits together organically. I'm sure it wasn't like a, all right, well, just start here and end here and we're good. But like it's, it fits together very well. I think some of the other books in the collection or the series, like, your mileage may vary. If you really are into like the X Factor camera folks, and there's really some cool stuff, some queer stuff actually, because you get Richter and Shatterstar having a lovely reunion.
Yeah. lovely being a very interesting word for it.
I mean, yeah, right.
A realistic reunion.
Sure. No, actually,
I mean, it ends in a very kind of lovely place, but
that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
But yeah.
And if you've read the Marvel Voices of Pride issue, I believe, unless I'm totally misreading one of the stories in there. Okay, maybe it was just on Krakoa. It wasn't during the event. But anyway, there's some lovely queer moments. And even, I think, who is it? There's two female characters that have like a moment. I know Kitty.
Loa and, crap. It's the one who, because then they get Legion involved.
One is
Loa, L-O-A.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget what the other character's name is. I'm not familiar with them as characters, yeah. But I know that I.
She is it Hope?
No.
I know Hope is dancing with someone, and I just can't remember who.
But Kitty, I don't know if that's... Kitty and Rachel were dancing together.
That's what, yeah. Kitty and Rachel were dancing, which was, like, yeah. They're not together. It's just,
but it's, but it's, an, it's the, like the one thing about the book that I really like is it does highlight kind of how everybody, all the party goers, maybe like not X Factor because they were like working security and everything, but all the party goers of how differently mutants interact with each other versus kind of how they interact with their human counterparts. But no, like it's, because it's it, like, I seriously, it, like the whole like Planet Size X-Men gagged me. But then it was the things I really, really liked is you actually got some more interaction with like other hero teams, with the Fantastic Four and Reed having his word with you still don't know what he said to Professor Xavier because Franklin is not a mutant. And he's not formally recognized as a mutant of Krakoa, so he's no longer allowed there.
Yeah, I didn't understand all that. I may have missed the issue that explained that. I think there was that limited X-Men Fantastic Four series that
it tied into that, but didn't, because in FF versus Fantastic or versus X-Men or whatever, they basically said that Franklin had a home on Krakoa, right.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and I guess this will maybe tie into something for the future. I don't know if I don't think they've denounced him as a mutant. I think they've just kind of taken back the, you know, you're welcome here.
No, he's formally denounced. It was an issue of Fantastic Four where I think it's Johnny goes to kind of visit the family and he goes and has a conversation with Franklin, and Franklin's, you know, he's listening to Dazzler, he's got like all the Krakoan like advertisements, he's got there's like a little map on his phone of where the Krakoan embassy is so he can go to the island whenever he wants, and there's a point where something's going wrong with his powers keep fluctuating, and he uses them up fighting some random cosmic being, which was more or less just a punching bag for him to get rid of his powers. And when he goes to the gate to try and ask for help from other mutants, the professor appears to him and says that the nearest they can figure out is that when he was growing up, most of the superhero community at the time was mutants. So he just thought he was a mutant. And his abilities are reality warping abilities. So effectively, his powers just manifested as X-Gene. The problem is now that his powers are gone, that doesn't seem to be the case. So the gates don't react to him. The professor told him, please don't try to come here anymore. And even Magneto at one point during the I think it's before the Hellfire Gala, I think it was the professor was like, should we reach out to Franklin, you know, and his family for help? And Magneto makes the little comment saying no more pretenders. So
No, well, that's interesting. Franklin. That's an interesting comment because as we'll get to, the event does kind of end in a certain way with this death.
A murder and, most foul.
This death is very... we're glad Oral's not on the show this week because it would be a tough moment for him. Again, spoilers, but I mean, and this is a little more recent, but I feel like spoiler warnings are sufficient, right? You get this moment, and I think it was in the end of one of the X-Factor books in the tie-in that Scarlet Witch is found dead. And I believe the Magneto's helmet is sort of at the scene of the crime, which is like, okay, obviously Magneto didn't do it, right? But doesn't matter. Helmet, bloody, it's Magneto, whatever, and it's his daughter, sort of. But that Pretender's remark does kind of then tie in, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're not keeping up with Marvel and all you know is the MCU stuff, well, I'm sorry, because it's a lot, right? Scarlet Witch used to be considered and really was a mutant and was Magneto's daughter and all this stuff with Quicksilver. And then at some point, I think it was under Remender's run, they took that away. And so now Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver aren't mutants. Kind of, maybe. And then House of M and all that shit. But like, long story short, that Pretender's remark does kind of foreshadow that.
Yeah.
And so
well, it was well after House of M. It was around the time that they were coming out with Age of Ultron and Days of Future Past movies were coming out, because it was the whole Marvel not having the rights to mutants. So they retconned them into being experiments of the High Evolutionary. And then their birth at Mount Vundagore and all of that was construed as being mutants, but they aren't. But that scene, honestly, before we go into, you know, the final reveal page, when Wanda, first of all, that art was stunning. She looked phenomenal when she stepped through the gate into the little garden where Magneto was. But that conversation, unless it was meant to be a kind of a red herring or throw you off the scent, was so well written and very much played into the part of you don't need to be blood to be family. Because he sits there and talks about, you know, for years, you know, we both thought this, and it takes two to pretend. And like all of these things that he said to her were phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next scene, you know, you see Billy gets teleported in, and it's just, and then he goes over and his mom is dead. But it was very interesting because this will then lead into, I don't remember the helmet, and I may just have missed that part of the art.
It may not have been in the issue, but it's in the cover art for one of the issues coming up. So people are like speculating that that's the quote.
Well, it leads to the trial of Magneto.
Yeah, that's right, the next big event.
Which is funny because it's actually they ended X-Factor formally as of issue, I think, 9. And that creative team is going on and doing trial of Magneto, which is kind of interesting as far as the continuity there. So it's like they're still doing the same kind of work, they're just not doing it under X-Factor. And X-Factor has been really good, and it has a lot of queer elements throughout with you know, North Star and Prodigy and Dokken. Honestly, it's the most queer X book, I feel like.
It is.
Do we want to talk about the backlash it received for that final issue?
I didn't hear much about the backlash.
I didn't hear much about the backlash either.
About them kind of taking and rushing through a story about an old white man who preyed on queer men of color
as
a serial killer.
That's
and
right.
Kind of just rushed through that story. I didn't take much offense to it. The fact that that was even a storyline in a comic, I thought was impressive. That it made it that way, because as you said, this is the queerest of the X books.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. You don't often, with the end of a title, see two or three pages from the creative team saying goodbye. So it was very interesting to see how that book ended. But yeah, I saw some backlash on the internets about how it was not the place for that kind of story and how it was handled and all of that. But it was interesting.
It was It was very, I agree with Pat. It was good that they touched on it. Did they give it enough room to really breathe and have its own thing? No, but it was still like, oh, wow, we're doing this. This is dark and crazy. And I mean, it's real. And so can we talk about one of the biggest injustices of House of X, Hellfire Ball? I did not see, and again, I'm totally holding this up just for us. I did not see the most amazingly outfitted member of this. I did not see Colossus.
You mean most daddy of everybody at that damn event?
Like, they did a whole redesign of all the X-Men. Everybody gets a cool outfit. And all of them are really interesting. They're all cool and different and unique. And I loved, you know, like Cyclops' advisor. We talked a little bit about this, I think, when this little preview thing came out. But the best one, the one that everyone I talked to was like going crazy about is Colossus. And he does not show up. He does.
He's in there.
He walks through the scene.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So he doesn't have
any speaking role, but he walks through the panel.
I mean, they made such a big deal about the outfit. I was a little disappointed that he didn't get a little bit more of a something. But
in that guide, like it shows the redesigns per book. So like it talks, because usually it's the characters that are from that book. So like the X-Corps, so Warren and Monet and all of those, like those designs show up in those books. So if Colossus is listed under like as one in one of those books, go back and look at that issue.
Okay.
And look for him just walking through the party. He's at the gala and just, I say walking through as if it's like a motion comic, but as you're going through the panels, he's just kind of there in the background in that outfit. It looks great, but does not have a lot of emphasis.
There's no real, he doesn't take place in a larger part of the story. Although I gotta say, so we've got the beginning. My favorite thing was, I think they highlighted the most important, the most important issues in red. And the last of the most important ones was actually Sword. I think it was Sword number 2.
Oh, I was going to say, because we talk about Planet Arako being the capital of Sol, our solar system, but we didn't touch on, and it's in Sword, who speaks for Sol?
but my thing is the build up to that was brilliant, because forevermore, I'm calling this move pulling a Krakoa, because not only do you have, who was the spokesperson? I don't recognize her. She kind of looked like Domino, but she had green hair.
Abigail Brand.
Abigail just walking up. So you had Star-Lord, and whatever empire he runs with his sister. You have the representative for the intergalactic empire of Wakanda. The Shi'ar Empire representative from there. So you have like Hulkling, who's now the king of the Kree Skrull Empire. So you have all these representatives for these different intergalactic empires, and they have offered them a special metal that they have created on the planet, which is, I think it's second to adamantium. And
didn't it call like Mysterium or some dumb thing?
It's Mysterium, but it's like, it's lightweight, heat resistant, incredibly strong. If you're using it for circuitry, it's like 200% efficient. Like they're pretty much like, you get to go home with like some of this for free. And if you recognize this planet as the capital of the solar system, they're like, you get to take home a couple tons. So, and I like how Hulkling was like, we'll take the free sample and then we'll get back to you. I like how Wakanda seemed angry, because in my head, I'm like, why didn't they do this sooner?
According to the notes, they are the only one who refused to recognize Planet Arako.
Yes. I love how Doom shows up pissed off that he wasn't invited. And I also like there's a little conversation that this will definitely link back to it, the little conversation that Namor had with Xavier and Magneto, where they offer him a seat on the council, and he's actual mutant royalty, so like he should be with his people, and he makes the comment that he technically runs or owns 70% of Earth, and they just own an island, and to come back to him when he has more to when they have more to offer. So it's very interesting, and I like the whole idea that once again they're offering something that was created by mutant hands just for acknowledgement. They're like, here's something that will make your empire, your lives easier, and we made it, and all you have to do is acknowledge the thing. So yeah, I'm calling that pulling a Krakoa, but the best part of S.W.O.R.D. was finding out who the regent ruler of Seoul is, and that would be Storm. Which makes sense. She has experience ruling a nation. She was also one of the five mutants that terraformed the damn planet, so but yeah, no, it's very interesting, and with the upcoming trial of Magneto, I'm very interested to see how this is gonna affect relations with the Kree-Skrull Empire, because Tommy is like the court, I want to say court magician, but he's essentially not only like the prince of that empire, he has like an official title, and his mother effectively was murdered on his home planet, but a different nation. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually tie that into how Hulkling handles his relations with Seoul now. Since I don't think he took the deal, but the deal wasn't off the table as far as he was concerned. So
I think the only one who, according to the notes, because they like to do all these data sheets and all these notes and everything, Earth, Richard Rider as Nova was a partial rep for Earth. But otherwise, everybody else showed that they did accept the deal. So it'll definitely be interesting how it plays out from here on out with going into the Trial of Magneto, going into Inferno, because that's what I was saying before. It's, you know, Trial of Magneto is one of the next big things to come out of this, besides X-Men and the, you know, the next 12 issues of that are going to run, and how that's going to shape the mutants in the world of Earth. But you have Inferno coming back with Mystique basically vowing to burn it all to the ground. So it'll be very interesting to see how it all kind of shapes up.
And there was also, I think it was the X-Men issue right before the Hellfire Gala started, or this might be the kicking off part for Inferno. But they have... the mutants succeeded in keeping the mother mold from being created. However, it looks like Nimrod is a couple hundred years early. Nimrod has been successfully created 100 years early. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out moving forward.
Yeah, because in Moira's timelines, Nimrod almost always or always spelled the end of mutant kind. So for Nimrod to come online and originally be a vessel for the doctor's mind was very an interesting take on Nimrod. And it makes sense, especially to when Nimrod first was introduced, especially with Bishop and all of like that storyline. But to see how it kind of is shaped for this new era, it was an interesting take on it. And and the other big thing coming out of this is Henry Peter Gyrick being a part of Orcus and seeing some of the heroes of Earth being courted by Orcus, including Captain America. Mm-hmm. So it'll be very interesting to see how this all kind of plays into how the world is viewing mutants, especially after the fireworks of Planet Size X-Men.
And I really loved the bits and pieces we got to see of Captain America's kind of reaction, where like Doom asked him how he felt about the whole thing with the fireworks and Mars being terraformed and everything. And I like how it didn't make him angry. It was just that line of him saying, I knew we would get to Mars eventually. I just thought we would do it together. And that idea right there, it's going to be interesting to see how people react to that. Because like the little side note from NASA, where they were angry, but they wanted to get to that planet right then and there to take readings, to study like what was done. Like the idea that they were like, well, damn it, we thought we would do it. And, you know, and then they didn't. So it's very interesting how Doom even goes to Captain America and is just like, how does this make you feel? And he's just like, I thought we would do it together. And I'm like, but that's what the mutants thought as well. That's what Professor Xavier fucking thought too. He thought that you guys would work together. And now you're being left in the dust because you didn't see what mutant kind and humanity could do together. So I really like that because like that, I felt like that was a kick in the teeth. Like some of the characters needed or technically deserved. So,
well, and then my last takeaway from it, speaking of Captain America, was when he and Emma were at the gala when he first arrived and she was doing her pleasantries as hostess and flirting with him. And then I think she was talking to Kate afterwards. I can't remember who exactly she was talking to, but she was kind of alluding to, you know, enjoying flirting with Captain America. And then she realizes, oh my God, I remind him of his mother. I don't know why that tickled me so much, but I feel like that was a great final takeaway for me. Any final takeaways from you two on the Hellfire Gala?
No, I forgot about that, though.
I remind him of his mother. Well, we hope that you all are enjoying this episode and all the other episodes that we put out for you as Flame On. If you do, please head over to flameonshow.com and check us out on all of our different social media platforms. Check us out on our Twitch channels. Check us out on YouTube, where we put the Rainbow Spotlight series once they've aired. All of that is available on our website, as well as our Threadless shop. So you can go and support us with some Flame On swag. And if you do purchase any Flame On swag, please let us know and post it on social media. Tag us in it. We would love to see you in a Flame On shirt. There's great color options, different shirt styles. We're in the summer right now, so you can get a tank in a cute color combination. Make it work for you. But is it fashion? It's fashion. That was for Eric. I figured at least now, after all the comics talk, bring him back in with a little peppermint and Bob the Drag Queen. But check out our Threadless shop, purchase some merch, and tag us on social media. You can also head over to patreon.com/flameonshow and join us on one of our four tiers, and help us support the show that way as well. All right, we have made it to the final segment of the show. It is time for us to talk about our one-ups. These are the things that are giving me life, giving me everything. I told you I'd eventually have the Mariah Carey clip ready to go. Anyway, these are the things that are giving us life, and they are everything. Let's go back around the other way. BJ, what is your one-up?
I'm pulling a Pat today. The main thing that's giving me life right now actually is just I've been playing. They just released Ratchet and Clank, Rift Apart, for the PS5, and it's been honestly it's funny to me. I jumped on the Ratchet and Clank train like I think back when the one came out for the PS3. But the animation, the story writing, Insomniac, I don't know who they paid for their story writing, but like that person, I don't know if that person needs to be called or like given every ounce of money on the planet, because like I'm getting a little bit tired of Insomniac games like Spider-Man and Spider-Man Miles Morales making me feel things. But no, Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart. If you are lucky enough to have grabbed a PS5, it is out right now for the PS5. It is absolutely fantastic. The weapons are hilarious. There's a weapon called the Pixelizer that downgrades the graphic quality of the enemies when you hit them. And then you can upgrade it to the Pixelizer HD. But then I'm on my second playthrough because Ratchet & Clank, it's a tradition to do a challenge mode after you beat the game once to get more weapon upgrades. And then secondly, they have released a ton of trailers this past week for all sorts of stuff. And one was American Horror Stories, which I guess are going to be single episode American Horror Story themed episodes, which some of them will go back to places like the Murder House, the campground from Freak Show, and it's just little side stories that involve those locations and just the world building of American Horror Story. And I think that will be good because Ryan Murphy is very good at beginning stuff, but ending stuff he's a little bit iffy on. So yeah, I'm very excited about that, and that will be on Hulu. I think that'll only be on Hulu. It'll be FX on Hulu. And I think that comes out this. So when this episode drops, it'll be another week before it comes out. But yeah, those are the things that are giving me life.
Sweet. So that is Ratchet and Clank on the PS5 and American Horror Stories exclusively on Hulu. Brian, what is giving you life this month?
So just a real quick mention, Reptil from Marvel, Reptil number 1 came out, and this is by our friend Terry Bloss, and art by Mr. I'm going to butcher his name. Oh, no, Enid Balam, I think is how you say it, and inks by Victor Olazaba, and colorist by Carlos Lopez. What I like about this, I'm not as familiar with Reptil as a character. He's one of the 50 State Initiative creations from back in the Civil War era, but also has been like Avengers Academy and just this and that. Basically, all you need to care about is he's Dinosaur Boy. Like, he's literally a dinosaur. Like, he's been fused with dinosaur or something. I don't know. It's they do a lot of world building kind of explanations, catching you up in the beginning. But and that's you have to. But after that, I really enjoyed Terry's take on this. It's very his Latinx family and just some really great little moments. I guess he's got like a gay cousin or something. And the remark was, it's as noisy in here as Untucked. Which, knowing Terry is a huge Drag Race fan and has done a lot of Drag Race art, like makes sense and is really a nice touch. It's fun. I don't know. I might pick up the next issue only because the character isn't something I'm that, you know, invested in or interested in reading monthly. But I'm so proud of Terry for getting this Marvel book. He's been in a bunch of stuff. He was also in honorable mention, I guess I should say, Queer Voices of Marvel, or Voices of Pride, I should say. He has a story in there as well, which actually I think I prefer of the two a little bit more. But it is a cute little queer, the whole thing is queer, but it's a cute little thing with what's Wolverine? Dokken. I can never remember his name. Wolverine's sort of son, I think. Like, that's his son, right?
It is his son.
Yeah, that's his son.
Yeah, he's got so many kids. It's a cute little story called Good Judy. That has Anol and Jonas Gray Malkin, and they're having a little conversation, and then Dokken gets involved. It's cute. It's cute. This whole the Voices of Pride book, if you haven't found it, if you didn't know about it, be sure to go get it or get it online. It's got some really great queer voices. Pretty much, if it's not entirely from queer creators, it's mostly. Also, a friend from the various conventions, Luciano Vecchio did the sort of framing narrative and the cover of the main book. Beautiful art. His stuff's always amazing. I think Russell Dowderman's got stuff in here. There's a delightful old story about Iceman, and he meets Magneto back in the original, like, you know, Five era, when Magneto was a villain. But there's this lovely little beat where, you know, it happens between the panels, right? Like, Magneto is like, why are you upset? You know, why are you crying? What's going on? And they have a lovely little moment where you can sort of see the early problems that he was having coming out or understanding who he was and all that. So Leah Williams, Vita Ayala, Steve Orlando had a story in here. Mariko Tamaki, Alan Heinberg got to do a thing with North Star and his husband, which is sweet. Tini Howard, of course, Terry Bloss, Kieran Gillen, who I didn't realize he's doing a new book, the Eternals book for Marvel. Yeah, he's bi. He came out as bi recently, as did Al Ewing. So a lot of writers and creators are coming out and being like, hey, by the way, I didn't really want to make a thing of it, but I'm bi, so that's cool.
Phil Jimenez involved in the book too? I know he did some art for like Pride variant covers. I wasn't sure if he was involved.
I think he did the DC book because he's more of a DC guy. I think he did one of the variant covers.
Yeah, because he posted it on Twitter. I follow him on Twitter. I want to try to get him on the show at some point.
Yeah, and Russell Dowderman, Chris Anka, Olivier Coipel, like they're all queer artists that, you know, we've talked about before. They all did variant covers for this as well. But anyway, Marvel Voices of Pride. And then I forgot the DC one. I don't think we talked about it before. I don't know if I have it handy, but basically Marvel and DC both did lovely little Pride Month books. If you're not going to LCSs because of the pandemic, I totally understand. Just look on your apps for them. They can easily kind of go by and you may have missed them. Both were lovely. I'm really happy that they're doing them. They're anthologies, so you don't have to be invested in these worlds to really pick up and read these little short stories. So check it out and support queer LCS, queer comic creators and queer comics at your LCS. If they do not have a queer comic section and you're comfortable asking for one, please be sure to Mike's store here at Arcane Comics in Shoreline. I want to give them a shout out. They actually have a whole like queer comics, like not wall, but like not end cap either. One of those like shelves of just a bunch of books. And so every time I go in there now, I'm always picking up some new indie queer comics to talk about in the future. So yeah, go ask for queer comics by name.
Sweet. Eric, what is giving you life this month?
So I know previously on a previous episode, I talked about Hacks, but one actress in particular, Meg Stalter, who plays Kayla, the inept receptionist at the management company. She, for Pride Month, which is over now, but you can be prideful all year long. She put out this satirical look at what corporations sound like for Pride Month on TikTok, and everyone should listen to it as it's permeating gay culture, as it's popped up on Las Culturistas, as well as The Bald and the Beautiful. People are quoting it everywhere, and just the new greeting for any queer people is now, hi, gay. And we're sashaying into deals this month.
If you do math stuff, you get four to four barrels.
If you do gay stuff in front of us, you get an extra 30% off.
I think my mom's friend is gay, so that's cool. No, it's just hilarious. Go watch it. It's fun. It's a fun little minute. And BJ mentioned trailers galore coming out this week. A couple properties we already knew about put out extended trailers. Masters of the Universe put out an extended trailer, as well as tying back to Marvel, What If put out an extended trailer.
So excited.
Which looks really good. So that's what's giving me life this week, this month.
Love it. So excited for What If. That comes out in August. Now that we have an actual date for it, I'm super stoked.
Oh, all and right. Alligator Loki. I'm sorry.
Oh,
Alligator
well, I mean, Loki, of course. Alligator Loki, the breakout star of the Loki series on Disney Plus. So for mine, I wasn't going to mention this at first, but I will, now that you mentioned Alligator Loki, I'll spin off into it. If you haven't checked it out, there is a 5-minute short on Disney Plus. It's a Simpsons / Loki crossover. It's like the Springfield Avengers.
So good.
It's like the good, the Barton, the Loki or something, I think is the subtitle. But it's only about 5 minutes long, 5 or 6 minutes, has, multiple end credit scenes. And the best part about it is the platform actually sets it up where you can skip the credits. So once you watch through the once you watch the short and it gets to the credits, it'll come up with a little button that says skip credits, and you do that and it goes to the credit scene. It'll start credits again, comes up, and you can keep hitting it till it gets to the end. So it's fantastic. Very cute. And the first introduction of Lady Thor before Love and Thunder comes out next year, I believe.
Yeah.
With Lisa Simpson as Thor. So that is with the new inscription as well, not the original inscription. Yeah. Should they be worthy, not should he be worthy. So good on them. The other thing, I don't know how I forgot to mention this last month, Liz Phair, if you are an older gay, if you're older and were part of that Ladies of Rock movement in the mid-90s, Liz Phair is a name that may be familiar to you. I didn't come about Liz Phair until she put out her eponymous album, Liz Phair, Liz Phair, in the early aughts, and fell in love at that point. And I'm going to see her when she is one of the opening special guests for Alanis Morissette on the 25th, now 26th anniversary of Jagged Little Pill Tour. But if her first album in 11 years, Soberish, came out last month, and it's a good album. It's a very good album. It's kind of a mix of her old feel plus some of what she became kind of known for after she put out that eponymous album. And so I'm a fan right off the bat. And then I tweeted something because one of the sets of lyrics, and I was like, damn, Liz Phair just snatched my wig off my head, why don't you? And she liked it, so that made me very happy. That gave me life last month, and I forgot to talk about it, so it's gonna give me life right now to tell y'all about it. And my friend author David J. Collins of such books as Gay Bash and Summerdale, soon to be Summerdale 2 later this year, was at Transistor bookstore here in Andersonville. I believe it was in Andersonville, if not in Lakeview. He picked up a copy of Horror Stories, her memoir, and gifted that to me last weekend when I went by his place. So Liz Phair is a big central thing in my life right now. And then just what's been giving me life has been a bit of Drag Race, both España, which honestly, even without 100% getting references, has been one of the better additions to the franchise. I haven't felt this way since UK season one. I know season two was good and had a lot of great, queens on it, but season one of UK holds a special place in my heart because we got to meet all of them as part of DryCon, as, you know, for Flame On being there as press. And All Star 6 on Paramount Plus. I know I mentioned it before with that very awful still of Pandora Box that comes up on my screen, but it's actually for the cast. I wasn't necessarily thrilled because there were some names I was like, all right, you're getting a third shot, all right, go for it. And as much as, you know, we love our friends, you know, at Ginger getting a third shot is great, and I hope she does well, and I hope that, you know, she goes far. But I would like to see some new queens get a chance. But the way that the season has gone so far, it's actually been really entertaining. And the Lip Sync Assassins have been really fucking good and been queens that really have shown that they're either Lip Sync Assassins or can throw it the fuck down. You've had Brooklyn Heights, who we know can tear up a fucking lip sync. You've had Coco Montrese, who is one of the first ones that was coined a Lip Sync Assassin back in season 5. You've had Laganja Estranja, newly declared her journey as a trans woman. So props to you, mama. I can't do any of that properly, but, you know, I tried. Who did fantastic, who fucking did a jump split out of the rafters and was probably the most talked about thing of that entire episode. And then Jessica Wilde on this most recent episode as a Lip Sync Assassin. And honestly, I've enjoyed seeing the people who haven't even had a chance to come back for All Stars more than I have some of the queens that are on All Stars. But on top of that, our friend Sonique is looking fucking fierce and overall doing pretty damn good. You know, hasn't been in the bottom yet. So good for her. And she's still my pick and my hope to win this season of All Stars. As much as we love Ginger, I think Sonique deserves the win. So I'm team Sonique with a side of team Ginger. So those are the things that are giving me life in this, the month of July. We hope that you all have enjoyed this episode. Make sure to check us out at flameonshow.com. And if you would like to, go check out patreon.com/flameonshow and become a patron. With that being said, bye, bitch.
Bye, gay.
Bye, gay. July 1st. Scrape the rainbows off of everything.
Bye, gays.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.